Hi, my name's Marie Lowes.
And I'm Maddie O'Brien.
And you're listening to... We haven't worked it out yet. Welcome to episode one. We are here at Purple Pear Farm, which is the scene and reason behind why we're talking to you at all. Before we get started, we would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this country, the Wanneroo people, and acknowledge the past, present, emerging traditional owners, any First Nations people listening today, and take a moment to acknowledge the importance of listening deeply to the legacy, the millennia-old legacy of cultivation, storytelling, innovation, sharing, that has happened on this country before we came here.
Good.
So, Maddie, why are we here?
We're here to talk about permaculture.
What is permaculture?
Well, that is a can of worms.
Pun intended.
Yes. Permaculture, to me, is a set of principles and ethics that can guide us to live a more sustainable life.
And a life that cares for each other more too, doesn't it? So at its core, more or less, the phrase is earth care, people care, fair share.
Yeah, they're the ethics.
Here at Purple Pear Farm, which is stewarded by Kate and Mark, they say that as well, but they also have their own phrase, which is intent, observation, intuition.
Very powerful.
Yeah, which I like.
I really like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's nice to have an intent when you're embarking on a journey of learning, when you're starting to try and think differently. You kind of want to know why you're opening your mind up, or why you want to shift your behavior or how you do things. Did you have an intention before you started this 10-week permaculture design course and internship?
Oh, I had a few intentions. Mm-hmm. My first intention would be to just expand my knowledge. I know I have quite a keen interest in permaculture, and I've been interested in it for a while. So just getting to know how it all works and actually getting some practical experience here at the farm and connecting with nature. Yeah, reconnecting, I think.
Rewilding.
Yeah, that's a great one. Definitely.
So why, putting the word permaculture aside, why did you want to get your hands in the dirt, learn about systems, learn these skills that we are learning? We'll get into what permaculture means as a fancy word. But
the big why.
Yeah, the big why. Like, what? How's this going to be useful to you when you leave here after 10 weeks?
Okay, well, I've come from the last few months moving out of the city where I thought I was a bit, you know, disconnected. So the big why would be just to do something different. I've quit my job in the corporate world and, yeah, I just wanted to explore some new avenues and just get reconnected. That is really why I'm here, I think. You know, because I could always take an online course or, you know, read my books or, you know, just learn in other ways. But coming here and staying on site and learning from Mark and Kate, who are really good at what they do, and learning from the other students as well, it's been so far really grounding experience. And yeah, it's something that I'm really looking forward to continuing and seeing what else comes of it, because I don't really have a really end aim to this. It's just about self-discovery and, you know, reconnecting.
That's cool.
Yeah. How about you?
I love it. I can hear Kate feeding the chickens in the background. For anyone listening, you're definitely going to hear roosters, which you already have, and all kinds of farm noises, so you're welcome. why am I here? I guess two reasons. For me, this is definitely a personal journey.
Yes.
Like, I think permaculture has an opportunity to be transformative in terms of how we think, as well as in terms of how we connect with food and the story of our food and the story of growing as well. And so I think I really wanted to work on some of my deep listening skills. You know, I think we can all continue to learn to listen deeper. And so getting out of my head, shifting away from the story of our ego, which dominates, I think, in the Western world so strongly.
Definitely.
So there's that side of things. And then there's also just wanting to learn the skills. You know, when we're here, we're learning so much about how to grow food, how to regenerate soil, which is a big story.
Yeah, this is healing the earth.
Yeah. We're learning about how to do homesteading skills, which is anything from knitting to making cheese, milking cows.
Yeah.
Shoveling shit. Like, yeah. It's the whole thing. Oh, also, we are near, what did you say before?
A landing strip.
We're near apparently a light aircraft airport or something, I think, but it sounds pretty...
Sounds pretty heavy. That's all right. I think we should continue.
Yeah.
This is getting good.
Cue banjo music. Yeah, I think it's great that we're near an airstrip because we need to get people growing their own food everywhere. So a little bit about my background. I've worked with families and communities for a decade now, together learning how to write a better story for the next generation on many countries around Australia, with many different communities, from traditional owners to farmers to, you know, families in suburbia. And lately I've been talking to obviously farmers, but also medical specialists like epidemiologists and then microbiologists who are like soil experts. And across the board, everyone is saying if we want to be more resilient for the future, we need to start growing our own food. Even doctors are saying that.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that Purple Pear Farm, you know, Kate and Mark have chosen to regenerate a site near an airstrip that's in, you know, a semi, like, sort of,
it's kind of on the fringe.
Peri-urban, yeah. I think is the fancy word for it.
Yeah, you can do this anywhere. Can be,
that's it.
You know, permaculture doesn't have to be on, you know, your 50-acre block of land. It can be applied to an area as small as your windowsill or, you know, your balcony garden. You can do this anywhere, and it doesn't even have to apply to a garden. You know, if you get to know the permaculture principles, you can apply it to help you in your social life, you know, if you have a business, it could be applied to your business.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah.
And it can start to sound a little bit like, oh, you're either in or you're out with this, all these like ethics and, you know, but it's so not like that. It, you know, you can kind of take what works for you in your life out of what we're learning and synthesize it into your world for you and, you know, leave what doesn't work for you, what doesn't resonate. And I love that.
I think so too. And I think with once you start to learn about permaculture and how great it is, I think it kind of encourages you to think about how you can apply your skills and talents as well in a different way. So I was working in marketing and working in a corporate, you know, environment doing design work. And it's definitely taught me to like rethink how I can use those skills to, you know, get the word out about permaculture or about growing food. And, you know, I think that's, you know, that's something that's just kind of a revelation that's happened to me in the last few weeks. And, you know, how far can we take this with our voices alone?
And that's it, isn't it? I mean, I think Wendell Berry says that eating is an agricultural act. And then there's Kathleen Merrigan, who's an amazing woman, and she says, she takes it one step further and says eating is a political act. And that means that any of us who eat, we're part of the food story. Whether we know where our food comes from or not, we've made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that your interest in food hasn't meant that you've completely left behind your existing skills and gifts and story, but you're making a new path and how it can all fit together. Time out. What is permaculture?
Permaculture. Wow, you just sprung that on me. That's unfair. You can't do that. Permaculture is, you know, living more sustainably. I reckon that's like a pretty summed up way to say it.
So we've got Bill Mollison and David Holmgren, who both have their own versions of permaculture, but are the, you know, touted and very deeply respected originators of permaculture.
Yes.
They've both taken it in different directions. David Holmgren, it's him who says earth care, people care, fair share. He has 12 principles of
12 principles. I've got to be honest, I don't remember them all.
let's see how many we can remember. Okay.
Okay. There's observe and interact, which is probably my favorite one.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great place to start, which makes sense that it's number one.
Yeah. Observe and interact.
There's also use small and slow solutions, which I love, because for me, I think that's a you've got the picture in your mind.
Yeah.
That's a great way for us to kind of divert off the beaten track that we're on. I think recently the coronavirus pandemic has made a lot of us stop in our tracks and question how we've been doing things and the systems that are at play globally and locally. And the consumerist conditioning that says we need to work hard to be able to buy things when we want them. We buy things we often don't question how they work. It's just if they work. We often don't ask how long they're going to work for. And so we go and buy. So I love the use small and slow solutions.
I like that one as well. I think it's more about seeing what you've got already as well, which I like.
Rethinking
what can you use in your environment. You don't have to go and buy anything. You can use something that you find at the tip shop, or you know, go and rummage through your parents' tool shed or something and see what you can find.
What else have we got? We've got use edges and margins, which is about incorporating a diversity of thought, perspectives, lived experiences, even in the garden, using the edges, microclimates.
There's so much that we can learn from the edge, I think, and something that can often be overlooked, whether it be, you know, you're in a more literal sense, using the edges of a space to grow food. You can also look at it as, you know, who is sitting on the fringe that might have some really insightful ideas that you could take a lot from, you know, what's your spin on it?
Yeah, no, I dig that. That's a good spin. I don't need to put my spin on that
one. Cool.
What else have we got? Buzz in. You got to do an animal noise, okay?
You're putting me on the spot here, man.
Yeah,
we've had a really big day out in the garden, so my brain is slightly fried.
Yeah, what else was there? There was use something to do with incorporating and not excluding. Yeah.
I've drawn a blank.
Okay. There's 12 of them and they're all awesome.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it in future episodes.
We definitely will. It's probably we could probably dedicate a whole episode to discussing those principles because it really deserves that much depth, and it's something that you need to discuss at length because each principle has its own, you know, it's very summed up and it can apply in many ways.
Yeah, that's so true. It's concise and also multilateral. It usually has stacked meanings.
Yeah.
I think we should ask people if they would like us to do an episode that's dedicated to talking through the 12 principles of permaculture and really get into the nitty-gritty of it.
Yeah.
And nerd out on that.
I would totally nerd out on that.
Me too.
So, yeah, let us know if you want us to do a podcast on that one and we can
make it happen.
We can make it happen.
So, Have you got a tip for people getting started? It was my job to bring the tip today, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For people who want to get started with their permaculture journey or even just growing their own food.
Yeah. I've got a fact.
You've got a fact?
Yeah.
True fact, false fact?
True fact, false fact.
Okay, don't tell me if it's a true fact, false fact.
Okay.
That's when I get to use my animal buzzer sound.
All right. The fact is...
Oh, we're going for it now?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, go.
Get ready.
Okay. Wait, what animal should my buzzer be? I always do chicken. It's my classic.
You can do that if you like.
Okay.
You might be able to spice it up. Maybe you should do a sound and I could guess what it is.
Afterwards. Oh, no. Okay. Who knows what's going to come out. All right.
All right. Are you ready? All centipedes have 100 legs. All right. I'm going to guess that was a goat.
It was a goat.
Oh, wow.
Wait.
Didn't sound like a very happy goat.
Sounded truly traumatized. I'm so
I think I'm
sorry.
A little bit traumatized. No, but was that true or false?
Hold on, Snow and Nugget, the goats here on Purple Pear Farm probably need a little reassurance after that. Everything's okay,
we'll go feed
guys.
Them some olive branches after this.
Wait, I got distracted by the pressure of finding an animal.
Not again, Marie.
Okay. True fact, false fact, true fact, false fact, please go again.
Okay, all centipedes have 100 legs.
I'm going back to the chicken.
Yes?
True fact.
False fact.
Ooh, false fact.
Although centipedes are named for having 100 legs, centi. 100.
Mm-hmm.
There is no known living species of centipede that has 100 legs exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a misleading name.
I know, right?
Don't believe the hype.
Don't believe it. It should be, each centipede should have its own individual name, I think.
I dig it.
Yeah.
Like Gary or Leanne.
Yeah. Wiggly.
That would make more sense than yeah. Gary.
Each their own. But everyone, guys, everyone be friends with your centipedes in your garden because they're really helpful for your soil. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. How are they helpful?
They just help break down the soil.
Oh, they're part of the soil food web.
They are part of your soil food web, yes. Just like your worms and your slaters.
Yeah. And
they're all good friends.
All the fungi down in there, mycorrhizal fungi. I've been reading a lot about mycorrhizal fungi lately and it is blowing my little mind.
There's really, I've been reading Milkwood's book, actually, which is a really good read as well, and about mushrooms and how you can grow mushrooms, like culinary mushrooms in your own backyard, and they're really good because they take up a space that a lot of your plants can't. So your dark, shady corners and your tool sheds, you can just grow some mushrooms in there. And they're quite easy to grow.
Now that takes us back to one of the permaculture principles which we could recall at this time on a Tuesday afternoon, which was use edges and margins.
Yes, that's it.
Use the dark spaces that maybe you can't grow your flowering or fruiting plants in.
Grow some mushrooms.
That's rad. I really love that.
Yeah, it's quite easy to get started. Check out Milkwood. I'm sure they've got a blog on it. But you can even just use a big yogurt tub or something you've got from the supermarket and make that into your little mushroom harvesting system.
Beautiful.
Yeah. What have you been learning about?
With mycorrhizal fungi. I've been learning about the purpose that it serves in the soil food web.
Mm.
So part of why I got really into regenerative agriculture, which particularly with the way Kate and Mark do permaculture, they go hand in hand, is because I learned that under our current food production system, we have approximately 60 years left of topsoil on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And that by the year 2050, we're going to have around 10 billion people to feed. And we're heading towards a pretty significant food security crisis, water management crisis. We have, significant climate change threats that are already affecting communities and displacing communities here in Australia and around the world. And I found out through research and through listening to people and even farmers and traditional owners' lived experiences that in the soil lies a lot of solutions to so many of our challenges and also so many ways that we can build resilience for the future.
Yeah.
And by regenerating our soil and regenerating what's called the carbon sponge, so our soil's capacity to not only hold carbon but have carbon cycle through it, we can address a lot of our water management issues, food security, topsoil, the carbon and climate picture that is so frightening for so many people.
Absolutely.
And a lot of that comes down to all the tiny little things that are in our soil that we can't even see.
And that we're actively neglecting, I will add. Or
killing.
Yeah.
With, chemicals and insecticides and pesticides, herbicides, glyphosate.
Glyphosate's a big one.
Yeah.
I know that you've done a bit more research than I on glyphosate. I know that I share a frustration with many others, people who might not see the dangers of glyphosate and really highly value the convenience of glyphosate.
Which I understand within the traditional farming model.
Yeah. So, my question to you would be, what would you say or do you have any tips for anyone who would like to encourage someone not to use glyphosate? How would you go about that?
First of all, I would probably think about something that matters to them a lot and say, I want to talk to you about glyphosate because that's how much this matters to me.
Yeah.
So first of all, to help them understand that it's not just a political conversation or you're not judging them and how they've done things in the past because often as people, we're all doing the best we can at the time with the information we have. And so I think opening up a conversation that feels inclusive and inviting and value-based is important. And then I would share some information. So there's a lot of emerging research coming out about exactly what glyphosate does to us, particularly our intestinal lining and to our microbiome, which is our gut garden. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these chemicals that we put on the soil that kill the soil food web and kill all that awesome microbacteria that's in our soil, they do the same thing to our guts.
Yeah.
And we know, I did a psychology degree and they definitely weren't talking about this 7 years ago or 8 years ago in psychology, but now we know that 90% of our serotonin is released through our brain-gut highway.
Yep.
70% of dopamine is released in that same system. There is a connection between our brain and our gut. They do not exist in isolation. Trauma, research around trauma is showing that trauma severely affects how our intestinal and gastrointestinal system works, and that by actually doing healing around trauma, it can also improve our gut garden.
That's fascinating. And I believe it because, I've seen examples of that in my life and in my family life where, there's an obvious imbalance between, what they're eating and their gut health. And, it does affect the mental side of things.
For sure. And then you're actually looking at foods that are highly processed. They have preservatives that affect us in particular ways. So that's stacking the effects of these foods. We have sugar, sugar, refined sugars, that's stacking the effects of these foods.
And beef, livestock that are fed on, GMO crops and grains.
Yeah, so this cycle of food that is affecting us, affecting us in negative ways. And we should say both of us at present, we eat meat, but we try and eat meat that has been farmed both ethically for the animals, for the farmers, and also for the planet. So that's in a regenerative way.
Yeah.
So in a way that doesn't come at the cost of the land and deplete it in ways that can't be.
I'll only eat meat if I know who has raised it, and if I can speak to the farmer directly that's killed it themselves, or they know this the sustainable way to yeah. process it.
Yeah, so you can hear the story of it.
Yeah, and I know that it's been, you know, respected. I think that's a key word when we're talking about raising animals for meat, is that the life is respected and you give that animal the best life that they can. And when, if you're doing that, it does so happen that it is raised in a regenerative way anyway, mm. in its natural, you know, natural way.
Yeah, which is important. Which is the permaculture story too, that
yeah.
Planet care is intertwined with people care,
yeah.
and that fair share is intertwined with that as well, because mm. we're not just exploiting and raping any mm. piece of land or no. any resource to a point where it's depleted. Yeah. We are using it in a way that continues the cycle so that it can evolve and we can evolve all together well and healthily.
Yeah, I think the earth care definitely comes first for a reason, and we have to give before we can get, I think.
Mm.
Like, if we can make a yield and, you know, have something to show for it at the end of the day, if we have some really nice sustainable beef that we've grown on our land that we can share with our neighbour, like, that's a really amazing thing. But, you know, what comes first is looking after the land and making sure that animal is respected.
Mm, mm. Yeah, and the resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the sun's starting to go down here. We've got a beautiful row of casuarina trees that Mark, who's walking past us right now, planted with Kate and probably with some helpers, because it's a real community around here. They've planted these casuarinas as a windbreak, and it's taken into account where the wind blows, where the sun is at different times of day. And also, they've recently built, or started cultivating, I should say, a wildlife corridor for kangaroos that migrate past here.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, once a month, the roos like to go down to the river near here. And because of urban sprawl and land clearing, the kangaroos are losing their migrational path. And so Kate and Mark have helped be good planet stewards. And and create a wildlife corridor.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
I know that they've created a great ecosystem, even though we're sitting in the middle of their Mandela Market Garden, which is predominantly to provide food for a number of families that are supporting Purple Pear. But, you know, there's a lot of critters that call this place home, and it's really nice to wake up and see all the birds in the morning. We've had some rosellas. Kate saw some grass parrots this morning, which she thought were a new species that she hadn't seen on this land yet.
Aww.
So that's really cool. There's a lot of animals that are coming to this, you know, oasis to call home. Got some magpies.
It's so beautiful. You can probably hear them chatting to each other.
I love their little chatter.
Oh, you can hear their wings flapping too. They've actually just perched in the pear tree above us, the pear tree which has just started blossoming, and I can see a sliver of the moon between the pear blossoms and the magpie.
That's just beautiful. What a beautiful day we've had out in the garden.
I know. I think our cells can feel when we're in an ecosystem that is abundant and biodiverse and that can provide for us. I once got curious about why humans are drawn to waterfalls. And what I found was that from an evolutionary perspective, we are drawn to moving water because we know that it is safe to drink.
Yeah.
And I think that remembering that we have wisdom in us that goes beyond our cerebral brain thinking,
yes.
you know, and that when we turn on all of our senses, when we turn on our sensory capacity to connect with the world around us, there is
listen
wisdom
to
in
that intuition. Now, this is a topic that I'm very interested in, and I've been reading a really interesting book called Women Who Run With Wolves, about this kind of topic, about listening to your inner voice and your intuition and that innate knowledge that's passed down through generation to generation. So that's another topic that I would like to discuss perhaps on another podcast.
Yeah, I would love that. If anyone is listening and they would love us to talk about that, that would be great. I feel like the geese are giving us a sign off. Yeah. So we'll wrap up, but I'm really interested in that too, because I feel like that's another thing that a lot of First Nations people, you know, carry with them, a wisdom, is the understanding that we walk on the shoulders of our ancestors, that we carry story in ourselves as well as in our minds and our hearts. And when we engage with that, we can understand ourselves better. We can get to know our story and what we're carrying so that we can, you know, connect with the world consciously.
Yeah, I think if we listen, you know, closely enough, the answer's already there. There's not much we have to, you know, it's not always external information that we need to rely on to make decisions or make judgments. It's kind of, you know, encoded. Yeah.
Yeah. And that brings me back to Kate and Mark's phrase, intent, observation, intuition.
Yes.
My tip before we go, my tip for the day is when you're thinking about things that you want to start planting, often people start thinking, oh, I'd like to grow some food. And that's awesome. First of all, grow something that you like to eat.
Yeah.
Second of all, second of all, observe the space that you're going to grow in. Mm-hmm. What kind of sunlight does it get? Does it get sunlight? Is it a really hot area? Is it windy? Different plants like to live in different conditions. They're like us. They need water, they need food, they need sunlight. They have their own wants and needs. So observe the space you're going to grow in and then stack the purpose of the plants. So if you're going to plant something, remember that often our veggies need pollination. So they need bees to carry nectar from other flowering plants. So also plant something next to you or near your veggies that will attract some bees and pollinators. Because the thing that I started learning with this permaculture design course and internship is that when it comes to ecosystems, it's not just about what's in the ecosystem, it's about the relationship between the elements.
Definitely. And I think with your stacking functions, I can give you a few tips for pollinating plants. Dill and fennel are great for attracting pollinators, but they also attract predatory wasps.
Yes.
So that's a stacking of functions. The predatory wasps can prey on the caterpillars that will eat a lot of your brassicas and lettuce. So go with that if you're growing some brassicas.
Nasturtiums as well are great.
Nasturtiums, yes, that's right. Marigolds are, you know, a pretty well-known one that do the same thing.
Because nasturtiums as well, you can eat the leaves, you can eat the flowers, you can pickle the seeds, and the orange flowers attract
the wasps.
Yeah.
And the bees love them as well. So they're a great, they'll grow anywhere too. They're great. And they're beautiful. They look so great in the garden. Rocket's another easy one to grow. Bees love it.
Yeah. And strawberries, because we can eat strawberries and lizards, particularly blue tongue lizards, love to eat strawberries.
Oh, I can tell you all about this. I've got a little ecosystem in my mandala and I've just planted a whole patch of strawberries just for the blue tongues. If there's some left over, that's a bonus. But they're primarily for the blue tongues.
I love it. Thanks for chatting to me, Maddie.
Sorry. Looking forward to doing this again next Tuesday.
Yep, episode 2.
Yeah, let's get it.